Welcome to Now Open the Podcast, the sex education podcast that's more sex than education. I'm Trisha.
And I'm Jobim.
This week we break down that thing Vin Diesel keeps making movies about. The controversial, the traditional, the Filipino family. I hate you, Jobim. This is part one of Sinong Tatay Mo, Gender Roles in the Filipino Family, where we'll talk about what defines a Filipino family and maybe get some insight into our mothers so you can finally forgive her. Trigger warnings, potential scenarios of abuse, and sensitive family dynamics ahead. If you're listening live and like what you hear, you can join the discussion by leaving a comment below, and if we have the time, we'll get to it as the show goes on.
This podcast deals with themes, languages, and situations that may not be suitable for young audiences. If you're under the age of 18, parental guidance isn't going to help you here.
So first things first, Jobim, what comes to mind when you think of family, and what was your family like growing up?
Oh man, those are two very different questions. When I think of family, I obviously think of the Fast and the Furious movies because I've been conditioned by society to think that. But my family growing up was, and I'd forgotten that I often used to use this growing up because I'd stopped at a certain point and just remembered recently is I come from a broken home. I come from a broken family. My parents split up when I was about 9 or 10 years old. So I did not have a typical upbringing. I wish I could have, I could say that my parents did their best to co-parent, but... that's just not what happened. So yeah, my family was very non-traditional growing up. It started off traditional, so I got to experience some of that, which is probably why I resent it disappearing so much. It's because I had a taste of it, you know? I knew what it was like, and then poof, one day, gone. And life never went back to normal. What was yours?
Well, I guess in a sense, I did grow up in a traditional family. I had a mom, I had a dad, both stayed together until my dad's very last breath. But I guess stayed together in a very bare minimum sense of the word.
In a very Catholic sense of the word.
They lived in the same house up until my dad died. They definitely did not go through any kind of separation procedures, but I'm pretty sure that's just the Catholic part of my mom coming through, but they weren't really a couple anymore towards the end.
Right. That's how you know that they're a Filipino couple. They're a traditional Filipino couple. They're still together to the very end. They hate each other.
Yeah, that was an interesting time growing up because like you're as a child, you are very much aware of the tension in your family.
Right.
And because you're very much aware of the tension in your family, that really defines how you relate to either parent, you know, and because of that, right. And because of that, like, I would say that who I am today is because of the tensions that existed in my household. So,
I mean, I know it's very Freudian to say, but the relationships that you have with your parents, with your family dynamics from a very young age will also help inform and come to define in some way, shape or form, how you relate to the opposite sex. So your future relationships are affected by your relationship with your parents and how you see your parents treating one another.
That is true because like they are your first model of what a relationship looks like. They also model how you emotionally regulate, how you communicate.
Yes. What is acceptable? What is acceptable in a relationship? What abuse is acceptable? How it is acceptable to be treated? How you're supposed to resolve problems? I had none of that. I had none of that insight because I never saw healthy arguments play out in my household. Never.
Absolutely.
All the arguments in my household growing up with just one parent, I realized way too late in my life that the parent that left was the defender, right? Was the one who stood between us and the abusive parent. It was because she was not able to discipline us that the abusive parent was sicked on us when they were still together. You know what I mean? He was the disciplinarian because she couldn't. And then after she left, we didn't realize what had been protecting us this whole time. And so I did not know what a healthy argument was like for most of my childhood and all up until my adulthood. I did not know what a healthy argument was supposed to sound like.
And I like how we're talking about this in, we're like saying we have non-traditional families because your parents split up. Mine really should have.
Right.
But right. So we keep calling these like a non-traditional family setup or non-traditional family dynamics, but very anecdotal evidence based on conversations I've had with friends. It seems like it's extremely uncommon or less common to have somebody whose family is still together, both in the Catholic sense and the emotional sense.
Right. You'll find a lot of families who are still with parents who are still together, but emotionally they've checked out. I mean, like, cheating is so rampant in the Philippines. You and your friends each have a friend or have gone to school with someone whose parents have cheated on one another. They're sleeping with this and that. And if you don't, I got bad news for you. It's you. You're the one whose parents are fucking around.
So I think maybe we have to define what a traditional Filipino family is for the purposes of this discussion, because it seems like our particular experiences don't seem to match a traditional Filipino family. So how is the Filipino family defined? Well, it's the atom of Filipino society.
Right. It is the mitochondria of the cell that is the Philippines. It is the powerhouse of the Philippine cell.
It is the smallest unit upon which the entire nation is sitting very precariously upon.
You learn that in social sciences and you sort of roll your eyes, right? Because it seems like government propaganda to be like, respect your parents. But yeah, it's true. Your family is the smallest unit of society. It is where your values and beliefs are first forged and hammered out. They are the beliefs that you carry out with you into the world that will later on be challenged. So these are your family defines your base stats, as I like to think, right? Your family defines your base stats. Some people come from certain family dynamics, which leave them with high EQ. Some people have, family dynamics that are the opposite. But I think what we learned in social studies is the traditional Filipino family, right? The traditional Catholic Filipino family must be a man and a woman, being a mother and a father, to 12 children who then take turns going to college until one of them becomes a doctor. That is a traditional Filipino family.
That's codified into law.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, what you said about your family basically deciding your base stats, it's very true, especially in our society, because Filipinos, we highly value blood relations and marriage relations. You know, like one of the reasons why my parents wouldn't split up is because of that very Catholic belief of what God put together, no man shall tear apart or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that also very Catholic idea of I'm your mom, I'm your dad, you're my child. We are a family unit. And no matter what happens, that's going to remain the same. And I think a lot of this is because of that religious background. But basically, the elements of a Filipino family are really not far off from what you just described. It's family-centered. It's child-centric. Mm-hmm. Typically, the Filipino family is defined by a large family size. It's very uncommon to see like single child households here.
Well, traditionally, especially if you go out into the in the city, I think families might be getting smaller, especially among upper middle class families, because it just makes more sense.
And you can afford family planning.
Right. To jump on Trisha's point earlier, like if you come from a certain family, they super care about what family the person you're dating comes from. It's not just important, like families in the Philippines are not just important in the sense that you have a good family, but the people that you surround yourself with come from good families. You know, it's a big deal. So your family's reputation is a big deal. Your family's, like, what your family does is a big deal.
Yeah, and that's just because when we think of family here, it's like your closest ties. It's
right.
The ties that can never be broken no matter what. So the people that you do surround yourself with because they're family, it does reflect on you. And we protect our families here.
I can't speak for other cultures because I haven't really been immersed in other cultures for too long. But here, you're kind of, to a certain extent, defined by your last name, aren't you? Like, if they know what family you come from, they already get a kind of good idea of who you are.
Yeah, and like, right? as customer Matt says, like, the surname really comes into play because when we talk about family here, we're not just talking about your immediate family. We're also talking about your extended family, your lolos and lolas, your titos and titas. Like, in my mom's side alone, I think I have 24 cousins, I think.
There you go. I think for my one tito, he has like 9 kids, I think. 8 or 9 kids.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Very fertile.
Extremely fertile, yes. If you can't already tell, the Javiers are, we are a fertile breed. Having children when we don't even intend to.
So in your particular family, who was cooler, your mom or your dad?
That's a very tricky question. Because it varies, right? Depending on what you're talking about. Who's cooler, mom and dad? If you were to ask me at the time of my parents' separation, who's cooler, mom or dad? I would have said dad, because when they asked us, you know, who do you want to stay with? We all said dad. Dad makes the money. Because the times that he would spend with us were so few and far between, he'd make sure that they were quality time, right? And our mom was taking care of the day-to-day stuff. And you overlook that. You take that stuff for granted, right? So who's the cool parent? Who's the parent you're going to want to stay with? Obviously, the parent who's always fun. Obviously, the parent that's always good times parent, right? But good times parent doesn't always necessarily mean attentive or good parent. And so if you ask me who's cooler now, like, I drink and smoke with my mom. You know what I mean? I can literally get drunk with I don't think I've ever drank with my dad. Like, to the point ever. Of like, yeah, of getting, I think he used to have a drinking problem. I think I remember him telling me a story of how he got like drunk once and then went on stage and forgot the lyrics. And then his other band members were like, all right, that's enough of that. And he just stopped drinking after that.
That's enough of that. That is done.
So, yeah. So it's a tricky question. Who's cooler, mom or dad? I think you'd have to. That would depend on what stage in my life you're asking me. What about you?
Well,
who is the cooler parent? I know the answer to this for sure with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad was no doubt the cooler parent, although there was a time when they were both cool. I mean, they got together at some point.
Yes. Yes. There was a time they were both cool. They could balance that shit. You know, they were like, yeah, we'll play good cop, bad cop sometimes.
Yeah. There was a time when they were both partying. They were both really progressive, both ran in the same circle and maybe had similar beliefs. Who knows? But that time is long gone. And when I was growing up, it was definitely my dad who was the cooler parent because my mom was more religious. My dad tended to give me a lot more freedom, a lot more agency. I felt more, I guess, respected as a person by my dad. And like, it was a very, very big difference. You have like your authoritarian mom figure and then your chillax hippie dad kind of guy who also had his own like disciplinarian thing going on. You know, he was still like that stoic dad figure, but he was also half white. So when I'm talking about like, do I have in terms of like the Filipino family, it's a little bit skewed. He is Filipino, but he's half white. And that the whiteness really comes through. It really comes through. It's very evident. But in a study by Alamapay and Hokson in 2011, they found that compared to Filipino fathers, Filipino mothers generally tend to be more likely to espouse progressive attitudes, such as granting their children more agency and independence and encouragement to express themselves. So I did not have that in particular dynamic because that was my dad.
I think vocally, this was my dad. I think vocally, he would definitely espouse, you know, going out there and being more taking risks and stuff like that. But in practice, he only kind of wanted you to do them on things that he approved of. I think, which is the opposite with my mom, who is verbally will you know speak out about being very cautious and stuff, but is emotionally more encouraging when it comes to you pursuing what you want to do.
Well, what about in terms of discipline? Who was more the disciplinarian in your family?
Oh, well, my mom wasn't around. Let's get that one straight. Not for lack of trying, right? But my dad just wasn't having it. She was not allowed to see us nearly as much as she would have liked, especially at the start of the separation. So there was no discipline coming from my mom. And because she knew that the pressure was down on her because we were living with her dad and my dad was just like gaslighting us 24/7 about our mom, you know, like you're living with a parent with a very bitter dude. So he's like, I wonder how much I can brainwash my fucking kids, man. I wonder if I can get them to like hate her to her core. And so she already knew that she had to like put her best foot forward. So even I guess when she wanted to discipline us, right, she was already like, I'm on thin ice with the kids. I just want to have the best relationship I can with them. So she couldn't, right? My dad would only discipline us when things reflected badly on him. If you can get away with bad things without him ever finding out about it, you're good. You're golden. But if it ever got back to him, you're done fucked up.
Did you get disciplined a lot as a child?
Define discipline.
Like punished, grounded.
You see, I think discipline is
a nice tap on the butt with a chinelas.
I think discipline is different from punishment. Discipline is when something is done to you to rectify your action. It's corrective.
Fair enough.
Right? I was punished a lot. I was like yelled at a lot. A lot of things were said to me that I don't think parents should say to their children. And so I don't count it as discipline because it did not have a disciplinary effect on me.
What about who was the more authoritarian type parent? I guess it would be your dad in this case because he was the one at home. Mm-hmm. So like this, the same study by Alamapa and Hawkson found that mothers and fathers, although they have a difference in how progressive their attitudes are, they don't really differ in their authoritarian attitudes. So the expectations that Filipino mothers and fathers have on their children, they tend to both expect their children to obey adults and authority figures in general. Mm-hmm. And like, this is really consistent with the prevailing social attitude of respect, seniority, and obedience towards elders. It's such a huge thing here, that hierarchy of anak ka lang.
Yes, and do as I say, parent. Not as I do. How dare you? Because you are a child, because they sired you, you have no right to your opinion. You have no right to say anything. And they love to bring up how back in their day, they couldn't even say shit to their parents, man. They couldn't talk. I could never talk to my parents the way you talk to me. I could never.
Did your parents ever talk about the insane and absolutely egregious punishments they went through as children to justify the slightly less egregious but still egregious punishments that they enacted on you?
We had very different childhoods because my dad would regale me in the ridiculously over-the-top punishments that his parents would do to him, and then he would reenact them with me.
Oh, no.
And this is how that works. Here, kneel on these stones.
In my mom's case, it was rice. And like,
rice.
It's really interesting because like when I was starting to go into BDSM, slight segue into BDSM, but when I was trying to think of punishments to put people through, I was literally just listing down the things my mom used to make me do as a child. Face the wall.
Face the wall, arms outstretched.
Yeah, kneel on these rice grains. They're really excellent for BDSM, not great for children.
Yeah, not so great. Oh, man. It might get too real for me if somebody's like, kneel on it in a sexual situation. Like, kneel on it, face this wall. Like, no!
In my particular case, like, my mom was the one espousing those beliefs of you must respect your father and mother. Like, one of the number one things I heard at home was the fourth commandment. Okay, I'm not even sure if it's the fourth commandment, but I'm pretty sure it's the fourth commandment because my mom would always say that. Respect your father and your mother. You know, anytime that you would like rebel against them or try to ask why they're
doing. Yeah, the fourth commandment is the Sabbath day, keep it holy.
I have no clue. I honestly haven't gone to church in a very long time. One of them commandments.
Was your mom always invoking that sort of that final argument of you're just the child? Was that brought up in your household a lot?
It wasn't just my mom, I guess. Like in a previous episode, I mentioned how parents would always be like, or older people would always be like, children should be seen and not heard. You know, there's always this hierarchy of
right.
how much space you're able to take up as a child, I guess, because you're young and they don't look at you as a human being.
Because
they look at you as their property.
As a parent, it's kind of hard. I mean, you should listen to your kids, right? And I'm thinking of all the times that I think I should have been heard as a child, that I had needs and wants that if they had just paid attention, they would have known that things would have turned out better for everybody. But it's hard to differentiate because you as an adult know better, you know? So if your kid says, I don't want to eat vegetables, you know they still have to eat vegetables, right? You still have to make them do it. Right. So it's like it's knowing the difference between whether you're making them do something for them or you're making them do it for you. Right. Because if it's just to fulfill something you have, then you're not really listening if they say they don't want to do it.
Join in on the conversation on the now open PH Discord server, where you'll be free to talk about anything and everything sexuality with like-minded people. Respectfully, of course. You can find the link to the server in the episode description.
You want to take us into the news, Jabim?
What? Oh, yes. Okay. All right. So, and now the newsstand. Before we get back to the discussion tonight, here is the newsstand. Last week, in a landmark ruling, Mexico's Supreme Court ruled that criminal penalties for terminating pregnancies are unconstitutional. This means that in the state of Coahuila, women cannot be persecuted for getting an abortion. This decision could pave the way for decriminalization across the country. Coahuila borders the U.S. state of Texas, where the Supreme Court allowed a state law banning all abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy.
It's so wild how you have Texas right across the border and they cannot have abortions past 6 weeks. And in most cases, most women don't even know that
right.
they are pregnant
right.
at 6 weeks. What is six right. weeks? That's a month and a half.
We didn't know until we were 5 months.
Okay, that's ridiculous. But
we took two pregnancy tests and they both came back negative. Each time we took them, they came back negative, right? So screw those pregnancy tests. 5 months, dude. She wasn't showing. So, I mean, like, yeah, it seems ridiculous to me that the cutoff is 6 weeks. But then again, it is a sticky area.
Right. Of the first trimester is 12 weeks. So this is basically yep. half of that. And again, most yeah. people don't even know they're pregnant at this stage. And right across the border, you have Mexico who... Congratulations for it's not exactly yeah. decriminalizing abortion, but at least it might pave the way for it. And again, as we talked about in a last week's newsstand, this is a very important aspect of sexual and reproductive health care. So congratulations, Mexico, and hopefully Philippines.
Hopefully. I doubt it. But see, here's the thing. If Mexico can do it, and Mexico is such a Catholic country. Mexico is such a Catholic country. We're basically the Mexicans of Asia, right? Because Spain also went and colonized. They basically did the same thing to us. So,
and it's not even like a joke, because a lot of some of the Spanish people who came here were actually Mexicans that they drafted into their army or whatever. So like we are,
there
some
you
of
go.
Us.
are actually Mexican descent.
If they can do it, so can we.
The 6 week thing. Bothers me because in Texas bothers me because there's so many women. I'm not a period expert. I'm not even a vagina expert, but to my knowledge, there's so many women who are irregular. For a lot of women, missing your period for 6 weeks is not a cause for alarm. It's not a big deal. At that point, a lot of these women wouldn't even be taking pregnancy tests. So why would they know? I think 6 weeks is a ridiculous amount to cap off, you know, like when abortion should be ethical. If that, as long as that discussion is still on the table, I think that 6 months, 6 weeks is a pretty ridiculous.
Well, what Texas basically did is they can't legally, I think, make abortion illegal. I'm not sure how Roe versus Wade works and federal / state law works, but I think I'm not sure if they can make abortion entirely illegal, but what they can mm-hmm. do is make it really, really difficult
Hard,
to get
right.
one so that virtually nobody can get one. And because they just don't want to have any abortion. So they're just finding ways to really clamp down on it so that it doesn't get anywhere. And shame on you, Texas.
And viva la Mexico. That was it for the newsstand. Now sitting down. Now on to the show.
All right. So I have a question for you, Jobim.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say your mom is a typical Filipino mom?
No. I would say that my mom is a typical Catholic. I think that my mom.
There's overlap really, for sure.
Yeah, there's super overlap. There's a lot of ways my mom is super traditional, a traditional Filipino mom, but there are also a lot of ways that she's not. Also a lot of ways my mom's pretty progressive.
So in which ways is she like a typical Filipino mom?
It's weird that I equate typical Filipino mom with not being progressive, right? It's just not. I just don't think.
Filipino moms are more progressive than Filipino fathers.
Yeah, that's not
supposedly.
Saying a lot. That's not saying a lot.
The bar is low.
Yeah, the bar is very low.
I mean, Digong is our bar.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You're saying moms are more progressive than him?
Filipino father. Okay, I hope so.
My mom, what was the question? What are the things
which
that my mom
of
valued?
Your mother, yeah. Or, no, which parts of your mom are the traditional, typical Filipino?
Well, she's very Catholic. She's very Catholic, and she's very, I would say, she tries not to be. She tries her best, but she does have a tendency to be overbearing, as moms do. You know, she just wants to do her best. She just wants to be as involved as she can. And there's a phantom umbilical cord that just floats around, you know, your mom all the time that links you to her. Even you think she doesn't know, but you trip and she's like, oh, my child is in danger, you know? So she's very Filipino like that in the way that she loves and cares. And that sometimes it is too much.
So according to certain studies, Filipino mothers place greater value on respectfulness as a long-term socialization goal for their children, whereas mothers in America showed a preference for individual autonomy and a capacity for empathy. Now, this is an interesting comparison. I like that they compared it to America. Not that America's our benchmark or anything.
No, I think it's interesting because you get to see the difference in how children are raised. Again, I'm not an expert on Western culture. And of course, television shows are ramped up to, you know, for entertainment value. But I'm inclined to believe that difficult children are more of a Western, American, British phenomenon rather than Asian. Because Asians will watch these shows where these kids are just off the chain, and they think, I would never be able to get away with that with my mom. You just have too much respect for your mom or too much fear of your mom. Right? So they may prefer individual autonomy and capacity for empathy, but just how successful are they in achieving that? In the same sense, how successful are Filipino moms in drilling in respectfulness to their sons? Because Filipino men are notorious for not being respectful, especially towards women.
Oh yeah, there's nothing here about the success rate of any of these things. It's just that Filipino mothers really value teaching their children about respect.
Yes.
And I definitely would say my mom's a typical Filipino mom in this sense, because like from a young age, again, respect your mother and your father. Don't talk back. Listen to authority figures. These were things that were drilled into me as a child. Did not listen. Didn't work even then, but there was an attempt, absolutely. And she definitely did place great value on it. But also, Filipino mothers are more likely to value qualities associated with achievements, such as being talented, smart, hardworking, goal-oriented, and responsible. Did you feel this from your own mother, that she was the one who was more like, I'm proud of you, you're doing well?
When I was in a musical, I think you can count on maybe one hand the number of shows my mom missed.
Oh.
Yeah. My mom is like my biggest fan, dude. Like my mom thinks I can do
anything. So sweet.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that answers your question.
Yeah. That it really seemed like she was invested in your success, and she wanted to see you perform the shit out of that. And you won an award. So I think.
Yeah.
She's very proud of you, probably.
She was upset that she was not mentioned in the thank you speech.
You didn't mention your own mother who missed.
No, because I made a joke about my dad being dead, right? In my speech, I made a joke about my dad being dead. And I just didn't know where to put my mom in there, because that was the punchline. That was the end of it. That was the end of the joke. It was like, I'd like to dedicate this award to my dad, wherever you may be. You know, that was a joke. So I'm going to follow up with my mom, who's like at home.
But hey, so, she went to see your shows.
Yes.
And that's like, that's really cool.
And I know that your mom recently made an effort to tune in to one of our Twitter events.
My mom is a very interesting person in the sense that she disapproves of a lot of the things I do, and yet she mm-hmm. supports me nonetheless.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing, I think.
Or she tries to support the things I do. Like, she tries to support the podcast. She tries to support our events, even though I think she commented something about, like, oh, I'm too old for this discussion. And definitely very conservative. I was swearing in that event. It's still weird to swear around your Filipino mom. It's still very strange.
Has your relationship dynamic with your mom changed at all during the pandemic?
I think it didn't change so much during the pandemic. Oh no, it did. It did change a lot during the pandemic. Now that I've taken 2 seconds to take mm-hmm. stock of my life. yeah, because like during the pandemic, her business struggled. So I've been in constant contact with her to try and figure out, you know, what to do about it. So it has been something that I've been working on her with. And I don't like if you asked me 5 years ago to work with my mother, I would be like, fuck no.
No, hell no.
Hell no. Hell to the no. Again, because of that whole, you know, respect authority type of thing. And now that I'm an adult and I'm taking over the business, or I'm working with her on the business, it's like, I can't do this respect authority thing anymore because I'm not your employee. I'm your partner now. I'm your business partner. So
right.
there was that disconnect when we were first starting to work together because of that whole, I still had to respect her and defer to her decisions. But at some point I had to set boundaries and be like, if I'm going to come on this team, we have to work here as partners and not as you telling me what to do or you like vetoing my decisions.
I think that children instinctively spend their lives trying to become peers with their parents, whether it be, oh, look, I am an adult because I am paying rent, I have my own place, or, oh, look, I am an adult because I have reached the same position as you in the company when you used to work, or I am an adult now because I am a parent like you. And we keep on trying to reach this point where we're peers with our parents until we realize that the value of parents is that they are not our peers, is that they will forever be our parents. They will forever, until they're gone. They're supposed to be that source of like security. They're supposed to be anyway, if they're good. And you just realize that there is comfort in not being a peer with your parent, as long as you have healthy boundaries as a parent and child.
So during the pandemic, it seems like a lot of things have changed for Filipino mothers. According to my research by Potestades in 2020, Filipino mothers have increasingly chosen freelancing work because it allows them to make an income while fulfilling their roles as mothers in both the home and in the community. And we noted in a previous episode about how the pandemic has disproportionately affected women or mothers, because they're the ones who are more likely to take time off from work to come and do full-time childcare now that schools are no longer open. And yeah, they're more likely to be the one to make those sacrifices. Right. Or if they're a single parent, which tend to be single mothers more than they are single fathers in this country, they have to somehow now juggle both a career and childcare. So working from home and freelance has been one way for some women or some mothers who are able to have access to the internet or work from home options.
Only a lot of them have been doing that.
You know what? Like, that's a whole episode, I think. We're going to have to talk about like
mothers. Moms on OnlyFans. Get them on the show. I need to speak to them immediately for reasons.
Or like mothers in general in the adult industry and how that. But anyway, that's an episode for future time. So it was shown that Filipino mothers are generally at risk in the freelancing world due to a number of factors. And I think that this is also very similar to the same factors of why they're at risk in regular workplaces. Number one, lack of maternity leave. Not that we have excellent maternity leave or anything. I mean, it's not as bad as the United States. Yeah, it exists. We have maternity leave in regular corporations. That's like a standard. But when you're a freelancer or part of the gig economy, there's no maternity leave. It's often a no work, no pay type of situation. And that puts a lot of pressure on moms. There's also, of course, a lack of knowledge in the gig economy. It's relatively new. So even non-moms don't know a lot about this thing. But then you have people who haven't necessarily stayed on top of current events or current technology because they're mothers. You know, they don't got time for that.
Yep.
And then in general, the lack of like tech knowledge on maneuvering online job sites, promoting their services, finding clientele, social media, all of these things, again, for the same reasons as not knowing much about the gig economy. So overall, really tough time for moms during the pandemic. So
be nice to your mom.
Be nice to your mom, unless your mom is an asshole to you, in which case you are not obligated to do anything.
Exactly. And that's it for part one of Sinong Tatay Mo, Gender Roles in the Filipino Family. Make sure to stay tuned for part two, where we point the spotlight at everybody's favorite beer drinker, your dad. We'll also shed some light on more non-traditional families, so be sure to come back.